Real 15. What kind of manoeuvres were you doing at Horsham? What was your role?
A bit ordinary manoeuvres, like, you know, they brought all these guards. They were all guards, weren't they?
And you were working with them, presumably?
We were working with them, you see. They were just all battery, and we were working with them, like. And as I say,
did the training, I'm trying to think of the training that you were getting then, did the training working with infantry, was this still First World War style, where you in effect the artillery put in a bombardment on an objective and the infantry went in?
Oh yes.
It was still in that kind of thing?
Yes, I mean, that was typical infantry work, like, you know, I mean, the infantry went in front. We, as you say, we bombarded them from behind. Long range snipers, as you used to call us. And we were bombarding from behind. And that, it was good exercise, I think, you know, and kept everybody happy.
Live ammunition or
oh, no, you're just in the countryside, in one horse.
So did you fire blanks or didn't fire at all?
You fired blanks. You fired the blanks. Yeah, you had blank cartridges, didn't you? You just fired those, right, which could be recharged any time. You know, and you used to fire them during pretending to say, right, didn't you? Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I'll never forget that because I've been afterwards been dealing with this guy for 20 minutes late, it's a complaint because the veteran's three trailer come in. And he's right out, he said, everybody. Oh, where are you going? Out of bounds. They can't put the canteen out of bounds. So we couldn't have back in the canteen again because they were using that for the pretty punishment drill. So we never got back in the canteen at all after that. We had to go down the town and go into the pub. We didn't like to go into the pub because we're out of bounds. They were all very posh.
So the civilians around that area wouldn't be too pleased about the army.
They weren't too pleased about us being in there. No, they weren't really. Yeah, I'd be honest about that. Probably had a good way,
How long did these manoeuvres last?
A month. Yeah, as long as that. Yeah. They wanted these put them through the pits, but that was why. They probably only lasted a fortnight if it had been. They must have asked for it to be done. So it was well into the back of September when we came away from there. And that was the last time we had any horses.
So this is the time that the army was changing?
The army was changing. We came back to barracks after this month's manoeuvres with the guards brigades at Horsham. We came back to find that they decided to mechanise the army. And not that we were sort of certain or anything like that because we still needed drivers, but they decided that we were doing well on the horses. And we all went on a crash course and driving.
Driving tricks?
Driving, yeah. We all went on a crash course. Jock McLeod had it. He'd already been away on a course driving. When we came back, like, he took us all, like, and all the drivers, and he used to take us out every day, teaching us how to drive.
It must have been somewhat regret that you saw the horses go.
We were so used to our horses, you know, you can't help but love a horse, you know.
What did they do with them? Where did they go?
I've no idea. And I'll be honest, after you probably do a good horse hunting about it, which was a very glorious, always had been a delicacy in Belgium, always had a horse hunting.
I would have thought that possibly.
I would think that's where most of them went, because.
You'd have thought that they would use them on, give them to farmers or sell them to farmers to use on farms. But there wouldn't have been any good for that.
It would have been ideal to me.
Because they were pulling wagons and so on, yes.
Pulling wagons and horses and that. I mean, you can only get so many horses, and then when you think of all the not only all of the artillery, but you had all your lances and the light guard, the light guard just didn't go, and all the armaments, all the horses.
So it just came a day when they said, right, the horses went, and then the wagons arrived. What were you learning to drive? What wagons were they? It was meant to pull guns.
Especially the field guns. And you had the CDS deal with it. You had an order box system which meant it could climb up many mountains. Because this order box, which is much higher inside the cab, meant that you could go up and you could come down because you always had a full pedal from big order box, not that big.
What did they look like?
A very low strung vehicle. It was a six wheeler. Yes, a six wheeler. Very low strung vehicle. With a canopy up. About not quite up to the height of that vehicle.
Six foot.
But it didn't use the tractor. You put the tractor on yourself when it was necessary. They had two big containers on the back of the thing. And it carried seven men comfortably. And you've got all your stuff and everything inside. And it carried seven men comfortably. You had a canvas canopy, which could be stretched over, it was raining. Quite easily unrolled and just put up and tied down, It didn't have any windows, no windows.
How did this tracking system work if you only put them on yourselves? I think you're going to say how it worked. It was obviously six wheels, as you say, but it could use tracks. How was it converted to tracks?
You had double wheels at the back on each side. So you would take these tracks off the back. Okay. Put your tracks down first, underneath the beginning of the track. You put the track next to the bottom. You would drive onto the track and just lift it up and with two clamps and just clamp them together.
And the wheels turned the tracks.
And the wheels turned the tracks.
How many gears did it have for the driver?
Six forward gears. Yeah, there's an auxiliary low gear and an auxiliary reverse gear, which meant that it was about 10 times lower than any other gear in the car. And you also had 150 foot of wire rope, winch rope, underneath. Dropped in underneath on the tools. And then you had when you were winding it back in, you had to make sure it went in properly and it didn't want anything. And at 150 feet, you could push. But if you got stuck on anything like that, you could push another vehicle out, or you could push your boot in. Well, many of the times later on, that we have to do that. Because you get buried, and you could drive through the deepest of sand. I've seen them down there with a manifold, glowing white, chugging away through sand. Actually pulling away through sand. And then you boost the gun up here, and push on again.
So it pulled the gun and the limber for the gun.
The limber and the gun, yeah.
And the seven-man crew in the back, gun crew in the back.
Oh, no, they walked.
Oh, I thought he said there was place for seven men to sit in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd like to sit in. Yeah. Oh, it's comfort.
And they would be the gun crew?
Yeah, sitting in
the armchair. Now, you were the driver, and you learned to drive this machine. Yeah. Was there a second driver or a driver's mate?
Well, you always had, you only had the one actual driver. Most people were taught to drive, you understand what I mean? But you were the driver. You had your own driver, and you did nothing else. Oh, that was great. At that particular time, you know.
So you learned to drive the machine. Did you also learn to look after it and maintain it and so forth?
Oh, yes. You taught all running repairs. You did all your own running repairs. You didn't call the fitters or anything like that. And it was only later that some major that happened that you needed to call them fitters and that to come out and do it for you. But it was a marvellous idea. I could later on tell you about different places that I needed to do.
How long was the training for driving and doing the, you know, the repair work, the maintenance work?
Well, where we used to go to the stables and things like that. Instead of doing stable work, we actually went on the maintenance work.
The trucks were in there.
Yeah, so that you were being taught all the, more or less, to keep your body running. It was only, like, as I say, it was only major repairs that needed to go to the workshops or anything like that.
As part of your driving training, did you drive around the towns and the villages and so forth in these wagons, in this particular site?
Yeah. I know they're about 9 foot wide, you know.
There must have.
I'll just give a quick example of a little incident that happened many years later. When I was driving a ship in the Indian Pacific, and we were going through Cairo. We had this 9 foot wagon. We were coming up to this intersection, and a big post in the middle. There's a donkey cart going down that side, and someone come up to the side. And this fellow that I called Darky Light from Hartlepool, he went to put that 9 foot one into a 4 foot space. And I managed to grab the brake and pull it on and stop him before he. I said, out! I said, they're fuel for it. If you can't see that coming off of there, you're
not going to. What was the top speed of these vehicles?
We were going down to 40 mile an hour. My music pitch a few miles. It was easier to
They must have used a lot of fuel, petrol. Were they petrol or diesel or what? Petrol.
Yeah, they were all petrol. That was before diesel.
Were they brand new vehicles that you got?
Brand new vehicles, yes. Brand new vehicles. And as I say, they were beautiful.
And did you have a driving test at the end of the course?
Oh, yes, you had a proper driving test.
And that also served for civilian?
I've got my very first license in there somewhere, 1936.
And that would?
I think if you decided in there or in the bar test.
That would allow you to drive a civilian vehicle as well, if you wish, right across the board.
It allowed me to drive any vehicle. See if I can find that. I know I've got it somewhere. I won't have destroyed it. I know it will be there somewhere. I thought I had it in there, but I'm thinking maybe in that little box.
So the drivers of horses became the drivers of the wagons. And obviously, by what you're saying, you like to drive them. You enjoyed that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, you miss the horses, right? They were like pals. They really were, you know.
But this would speed everything up. You could go longer distances in a bit of time.
Well, actually, what happened was we still left with the old wooden wheels, weren't
they? Oh, I was going to ask you about the wheels. Yes, there were wooden wheels on these vehicles.
They still had the old wooden wheels on. Okay. So they got over that by transmitting a bit of a trailer, whereby you hung the wooden wheels on, okay?
Sorry, it's the guns you're talking about, the wooden wheels. Yeah. But the vehicles themselves had pneumatic wheels or solid
pneumatic wheels on the front tire, which were puncture proof. Mm-hmm. That the liquid inside, which would keep you going if you got a puncture, like unless it was really ripped apart, like that would keep you going. And you had a special kit which you could vulcanize. Which you use yourself, you vulcanize it onto the tire, and maybe you've got the chance to stop. And you would vulcanize it, and then put the pressure back into the tire again. And it would carry up.
So there were pneumatic tires on the front. Were the solid tires at the back? Or
no.
They were pneumatic as well.
Pneumatic tires with a big grip on, and a big curl grip on the back. Yeah.
And you carry spare tires, presumably.
Oh yes. Yes.
But the guns, as you say, still had the big wooden wheels.
Still had the big wooden wheels, yeah. The transformer, we got ones with the automatic with the
solid tire with
no,
the pneumatic tires.
All filled with the same substance, so that it seemed itself.
Were they essentially the same guns as you'd had from years back?
No, different.
They just changed the wheel, did they?
Just changed the wheel, yeah. And I know when we got to India, you see, they didn't recognise out there, but they didn't have the same vehicles as we had there. They had a different vehicle out there. But that's later on. But as regards a Vulture, there is no way that anyone could fault that vehicle.
Very reliable, were they?
Reliable, like they hit. Kicked me anywhere. Well, we really must have done thousands and thousands of miles there. And I mean thousands. Because we've got these same vehicles later on.
So now, instead of riding horses, you pulled your gun into a position for firing, yeah. And basically, what happened to you then? You drove the vehicle out.
We just drove the vehicle back to what we termed the wagon lines.
Yeah. Which
we termed it the wagon lines.
So that hadn't changed for you.
That hadn't changed at all. No, you would go back maybe up to 10 miles in a week, depending on where you were. If you wanted to be, if you were only going to be a short while, well then you would just go back a couple of yards or something like that. If you were going to be any length of time in any different position, you would go a couple of miles out of here. Keep out of the road.
What happened to the farriers? Did they become fitters or what?
The farriers all became instant quartermasters to finish the time off. Talk about that. We had a bloke. I never get a bloke. Actually, we did that. There was a lot of gold before that, but actually in the desert, this ex-farrier, he puts these blankets outside his tent, you know. He said, was it? US kid here. All right. He had two blankets outside the tent. One, US kids here, and he had another blanket there, that was deficient in here. He's a good guy, he had no comments. Oh, I tell very tales about him. Probably will later on, I don't know, this is just cooked in mind.
Presumably, though, in peacetime, pre-war, officers kept their own private mounts for polo and so forth.
They still had their own horses. I still had even Campbell in there. He still had a string of horses in there. And the major, he had about four horses in. Scott somewhere, he had about four or five. He was the only one in Bent. He had a couple that decided to ride on it. But the only one that didn't have any was
Street, The composition of the troops and the batteries would be basically the same.
Basically the same, yes. The only thing was they changed the name from being a brigade to a regiment. Now we became the 24th Field Regiment.
And that was still the same composition of batteries, troops.
Batteries, troops, exactly the same constitution. Why they changed the name, I have no idea.
Were you, I didn't get to ask this. Were you part of an army division as well as, you know, you've named your regiment?
Oh, well, I suppose we would be, like, you know, but we aren't.
But you didn't know, you didn't know this.
Well, you'd be part of the Aldershot Command Division.
I mean, Southern Command, probably, was it?
Aldershot Command Division. I know that I won a championship, boxing championship at the Aldershot Command. That happened in 1936. I was in. It was funny. We boxed all the way through all these fucking min rounds and that, you know. And I did just for the night. And I met a bloke out of my own regiment in the final. I was 7-0 back there, and he was the ex-Northern Ireland junior champion. I called John Lamont. Now, I'd never thought of that name for 50 years, but it just comes straight out of my mind. Fellow called John Lamont. Great Northern Ireland junior champion.
And you were boxing for your battery?
And I fought him in the final of the Aldershot Command. And he fought his way through, and I fought my way through. And we met in the breaking final, so I was the same battery. It was unbelievable.
Which you won?
I won, yes.
Was there a prize, a trophy for you?
Yes, I've got a silver inscribed wristwatch. All inscribed in the Aldershot Command and Boxing Championships. There's a story nice for that, I know, because I lost it many years later. And I didn't know at the time we were going, but I found out later when this is what I'm
saying. Someone took it, Daddy?
Yeah, from me.
So you had these sporting activities were also going on at the same time.
I mean, all the time. Even then, at that time, before this Aldershot Command Boxing Championship came up, our major was very interested in that. He bought a professional boxer with a fellow called Reece Williams, ex-lightweight champion, British Empire. He brought him in to train us. He actually paid him to come in and train us to look at the king goes like, you know. And it succeeded as far as I was concerned.
And there must have been a quite a lot of training for that, daily training that you had to find yourself.
The thing was, if you went into the boxing team and anything like that, you always got excellent group. You got excellent group in one team. You got experience different from the age, because you can go out training. Where other people do teaching or something like that, you would just go up train and you'd just go up, do a run or whatever. And then you would go back again at night and do a bit of boxing. Yeah, you know.
Well, we're getting now towards the end of 36, presumably.
Oh, yes, you're coming to the end now because I said.
Did you have Christmas in Aldershot or did you come home on leave?
I was on the sea.
Oh, you moved, yeah. Well, when did this happen?
May 36. I was given a month's leave. I just more or less just learned a bit of driving, as a matter of fact, right, you know. And I was given a month's leave, and which was like embarkation. And I came back.
How did your family feel about you going abroad? But your father, really, was in the mood.
In fact, one of my brothers had already joined me. He joined in the East York. He'd already joined the East York.
So you were looking forward to going abroad?
Yeah. Well, somewhere I'd never been, somewhere I'd never seen. And I look forward to it. Yeah. I'm obviously looking back. I've just resurrected last Thursday. I
Did you move off from Aldershot to go abroad?
Oh yes, we went from Aldershot down to Southampton.
And was this the whole battery or
what? No.
Just a draft?
Just a draft. Yeah. It'll be about 20 years ago. I'm looking back. Because the three of us at home, after losing Jackie Willoughby, the two of us were all in my battery. That friend shot away, who became my lifelong friend. He only died 3 years ago. And Peter Lynn from Southampton. And we were like the Holy Trinity, as it's called. Whenever one or two was up far behind, we're always there together, you know. And we're stuck together, right until the later on, right? You know? Only because that's in the green, right?
Did you know where you were going to?
No.
You hadn't told you that?
I hadn't a clue.
Just told you going on draft?
Not a clue. We told we were going on draft, so I came home, I had a good month's leave at home. Went back to Aldershot, put on a train and was sent down from Aldershot to Southampton.
Do you remember the date of this?
Well, it was before Christmas, and it took us about 3 weeks to get there. And we actually had Christmas on the ship.
Right, so we've got a time factor, yeah.
That's about the time.
Right. So you went to Aldershot and, of course, you embarked there. Do you remember the name of the ship that you went on?
Geneva. I've never thought of that for a long time, but the Geneva, yeah. The Geneva. This ship was about 8,000 tons, I think. Yeah, about that. In fact, they used to use it down here many years ago. A school ship. It was part of the Bibby line from Liverpool.
And was it made? It was a trooper, was it? A troop ship, was it?
At that time, it was essentially a troop ship, nothing else. There was the Dunera, the Dilwara, and the Dunedin. Three troop ships. That was it. It's funny how they were doing that right now. Dunera, Dilwara, and Dunedin. Yeah, they were the three troop ships from the beginning.
And where were you berthed on the ship?
Berth.
Or at least where did you sleep on the ship and eat?
Hammocks.
On the mess decks?
Yeah. Oh, you had your own hammock. You slept in a hammock. You weren't allowed to sleep anywhere else. You were all in hammocks. Like little sardines. And I'll never forget it because I went, as we sailed, or as we were sailing, I should say, we'd gone on board, and I thought it was a pretty hell of a ship, you know. I've never been on a ship as big as me, like, to be honest. And we've gone on the ship, and it's a bloody great. And we've more or less first on, so we had a canny bullet, as Bill exploded. And we took the more or less the upper deck, rather than carrying on people, like, you know. So, but when we came up on deck and I looked round, and that was the very first time I'd ever seen it, the Queen Mary. Never seen it before. I couldn't believe when I was just across the dock, you know. I looked out, we just passed on up the companionway and disappeared into the depths of the ship. And then we came on, we looked like a little roadboat compared to the Queen Mary.